Welcome to Be Happy, a podcast by the Hepatitis B Foundation, discussing all things related to hepatitis B. It's your hosts, Evangeline
and Bright.
And today we are joined with Dr. Mike Sophia, co-founder and chief scientific officer at Arbutus Biopharma. He previously conducted research which led to the hepatitis C cure and is now dedicated to finding a cure for hepatitis B.
I think it is fair to say that many of us will acknowledge that hepatitis B is a complex disease. Most hepatitis B patients wonder why it is taking so long to find a cure for this disease. So to learn about the drug development process and try to understand the challenges and complexities facing scientists and researchers, we want to educate ourselves and also make our listeners aware of the process and complexities while offering hope for a future where there is a cure for hepatitis B.
Dr. Sophia, welcome to the podcast. Please tell us a little bit more about yourself.
Thank you. Happy to be here and join in on this podcast. So I am, as you said, the chief scientific officer and co-founder of Arbutus Biopharma, a company that's really focused on trying to find a cure for hepatitis B. I've been in the pharma biotech world for about 34 years, doing drug discovery primarily and trying to develop therapies for human diseases across a wide spectrum of disease areas. But in the last 20 years, been focused primarily on viral hepatitis.
Thank you so much for being here. So you mentioned in the last 20 years, you've been focused on viral hepatitis, and Arbutus is solely dedicated to finding a cure for Hep B. So could you tell us more about Arbutus, what you do there, and the focus of this drug development program at Arbutus?
Yeah, sure. So Arbutus is a biotechnology company focused and committed to finding a cure for hepatitis B and coronaviruses. We both discover and develop therapies for these two diseases. That means we have a research group that designs and evaluates drug candidates and then takes them through clinical trials to determine if they will be effective against HBV and coronaviruses. And HBV and coronavirus research and development is all we do here at Arbutus Biopharma.
Sounds very interesting. So it's completely dedicated to coronaviruses and hepatitis B, which is very cool.
Dr. Sophia, so prior to Arbutus, your team were responsible for curative drugs for hepatitis C. So are most scientists part of a preclinical process that leads to an eventual drug approved for use? And how does it feel to have had a major career success?
Well, the journey towards the discovery of a drug to treat or cure a disease is exceptionally challenging. The chances of success are very small. Therefore, many scientists never succeed in having a drug get to approval and reach the market to treat patients. So I consider myself very lucky to have played a key role in discovering a drug that cures HCV and has helped literally millions of patients around the world. It certainly has been very rewarding not only to have such a major scientific accomplishment, but most of all to know that one has made such an impact on the lives of so many individuals. I've met many individuals whose lives have been transformed by the drug that I discovered. Their gratitude has overwhelmed me and has made me want to continue what I do, which is to keep making and discovering drugs that cure diseases and hopefully change people's lives for the better.
That's so kind of you. And patients like myself, we are very grateful to have you.
Oh, thank you. It's certainly sort of my life's mission and my pleasure to be part of these efforts to ultimately try to find drugs that cure these diseases and help patients live normal lives.
That is absolutely wonderful. And so you mentioned it's an extremely long process and you feel incredibly lucky that you were able to achieve such career success with hepatitis C. So are there lessons learned from your hepatitis C journey, research journey that can be applied to hepatitis B in terms of treatment research? And then how are these hepatitis B and hepatitis C different from each other?
When we started down the road to tackle the HBV problem, we did draw on some of the learnings from the HCV success story. One of them is the need to develop a combination therapy. The use of combination therapy means that you develop a cocktail of drugs that attack the virus at multiple points in its life cycle. This way, you weaken the virus quickly and don't give it a chance to come back. This was successfully done in HCV, where combinations of potent drugs is now able to cure greater than 98% of patients. We hope that this approach will also bring success against HBV. But as you said, HBV and HCV are very different. Actually, HCV is an RNA virus and HBV is a DNA virus. HBV deposits a stable form of its genetic information into the liver cell that is responsible for reproducing more virus. HCV doesn't deposit such a reservoir. HBV also is able to integrate pieces of its genetic information into the host or human genome, but HCV does not integrate at all. This allows HBV to produce some viral proteins from a different pathway, and this integration is believed to be the reason HBV can progress directly from chronic disease to liver cancer, which is different than the pathway for HCV to liver cancer. And finally, HBV has a more sophisticated way to control the body's immune response compared to HCV. In addition, HBV has quite a number of disease states that are not completely understood and make the disease much more complicated.
Yes, that all sounds very scientific and technical, or at least for me. What are some of the biggest virological challenges to curing hepatitis B? You mentioned that DNA integration, that difference between the DNA and the RNA. And so is there something about this virus that makes it difficult to cure? You said the pathways to why it progresses to liver cancer. And can you explain why finding a cure for hepatitis B is so difficult and challenging? I know you touched on it a little bit, but maybe expanding on that.
Sure. Well, finding a cure for HBV is particularly challenging. There are still many things we don't know about how this virus works and how it interacts with the human body. One unique feature of the virus is that it deposits a form of the genetic information into the nucleus of the liver cell. I mentioned this before. This is known as covalently closed circular DNA, which is a very stable form of DNA, and what makes it stable is unknown. How to get rid of it is a real problem that is yet to find a solution for. HBV also integrates some of its genetic information into the body's genome, allowing it to make certain viral proteins the viral needs to survive. Also, the HBV virus has a very unique way of hiding itself from the body's immune system so that the immune system can't eliminate the virus easily. It's like the immune system doesn't recognize the presence of the virus at all. All of these issues make finding a cure for HBV particularly challenging and makes it a problem that requires multiple approaches to ultimately finding the solution.
Yes, it sounds like there's multiple things you guys need to keep in mind, researchers need to keep in mind, and scientists that are working on this cure to really attack it from all ends.
So, Dr. Sophia, just a follow-up question on the response you just gave. So do you think, in your view, do you think that the difference in multiple genotypes that exist for hepatitis B present any challenges as scientists try to find a cure? Does that in any way pose any challenges at all?
Sure. I mean, you know, different patient populations around the world seem to have different genotype prevalences. And what you see is these different genotypes behave in slightly different ways from each other. And so when one develops a drug, you know, you have to take into account the ability to actually, you know, attack all these genotypes sort of equally effectively. And that's sometimes hard. I learned from HCV, many of the genotypes do respond very differently to drug therapy. And it took a period of time before one was able to develop what they call pan-genotypic agent, an agent that actually worked equally well against all the genotypes. So in HBV, you're going to have the same problem, I believe. You know, I think we're aware of that. And, you know, we will be continually optimizing our drugs to try to make sure that ultimately we're able to work equally effectively against all these different genotypes.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like HBV poses a lot of challenges and tricky scenarios that scientists have to go through to make sure they are getting everything. And we are very hopeful that a breakthrough will happen at some point. So can you tell us about the preclinical research process and what that looks like from your perspective?
Sure. So the preclinical research process is that process by which a new drug is discovered and then evaluated to make sure it works and is safe for taking into human clinical study. So first, in this process, you identify a biological target that you believe is relevant to how the disease works. So that is something that the virus does, in this case, that you can target that you think will be a good therapeutic a strategy. Then you have to validate that target to make sure that that actually has something to do with the disease itself. And then from there, you build an assay, a way of testing that allows you to begin to screen potential drug candidates against that target. Next, when you find something that has some level of biological activity against the target, you then need to work to try and make it better so that it's good enough and safe enough to give to a human. This is an iterative process that relies on a chemist to make different versions of that initial active agent. It could be hundreds of compounds or thousands of compound variations are done. And then the biologist tests for the desired activity, both in cells and in animals. Along the way, you have to test the drug candidate to make sure it's safe. This requires testing in cells and in animals again. And then once you find an agent that looks like it has the properties you want, you do more testing in animals, sort of in a model of disease and then in toxicological studies. And finally, then you even do more safety assessments before you can declare it ready to go in a human clinical trial. So this is a very long process that can take sometimes 2 to 4 years to ultimately complete so that you have a candidate that actually can go into a human clinical trial to see now whether it works in a clinical setting.
That sounds like a lot of important steps and processes to go through to really get to even the end. And like you said, it takes a long time as well. Thank you for sharing that with us.
If it doesn't make it through, like, say, the third or fourth step, do you guys have to go back to the beginning to figure out something else and modify it?
Yeah. So as I mentioned, it's an iterative process. So along the way, it's not linear. Everything doesn't work along the way. So you might fail in safety assessment, right? You might fail in not getting the right efficacy. So that chemical series doesn't really look like it's going to pan out. So then you got to go back and see what you can do to solve that particular problem. And sometimes there's multiple iterations, multiple cycles of things that you have to do ultimately to solve that problem in the end.
Right. And then that's why it takes the 2 to 4 years even.
Right.
Possibly. Wow. Okay. That's good to know why it takes so long for even to get through even in a clinical trial process. So studies show that it can take more than $2 billion to get through a drug development and approval, and only about 12% make it through the clinical trials. So why is drug development so difficult and expensive? And you mentioned that process, but is there something you could expand on in that?
Well, yeah, I'd like to expand on, several things here. There are two key aspects to drug discovery and development. You need to discover a drug that is both effective, but also safe, right? In many cases, you're trying to discover an agent to treat a disease where there has never been a drug to treat that disease. This requires a great deal of exploratory research, followed by an extensive period of optimizations, as I mentioned before, of that drug candidate to meet preclinical efficacy and safety profiles. And many times, really you have to develop maybe new science and new technology along the way to be able to achieve this. There are also very extensive safety testing in multiple cell lines and animal systems to ensure a potential drug will not harm patients. This is always a very important thing. There are always many times that you can find an agent that works, but it's not safe. So to get to this point could take multiple years, as I mentioned before, and significant investment. This discovery phase is then followed by clinical development phase, which is carefully guided by FDA regulations and requires multiple phases, each requiring testing in larger and larger number of patients, sometimes up to several thousand patients, to evaluate both the safety and efficacy in human clinical setting. As a highly regulated process, this phase can take many, many years to complete. Then there's all the work that needs to go into how to effectively manufacture the drug on a scale that will meet the needs of all the patients. This manufacturing work is also highly regulated and requires that you meet certain standards. And you have to have this process in place before you even launch a drug. So all this happens before you even begin to sell the drug. Added to these challenges is the fact that the body is a very complex system, and there are still many things you don't know or understand about how the body works. In the majority of cases, after all the work that goes into progressing a drug that is based on an idea into human clinical studies, the drug may not work or be safe enough in the end. So all that 8 to 10 year investment is lost and you must start all over again. So consequently, when you put all of this effort together, requiring many individuals, significant upfront investment, along with great uncertainty around whether the drug will actually work and be safe, it's no wonder that successfully discovering a drug for a disease is really very difficult and very costly.
the fact that it could be up to a 10-year process makes it extremely costly, even for thinking about staff and drug development, all those overhead costs. Say that a company discovers a cure and ends up going through that whole process and is successful. Do they have to fund that entire thing through?
Yeah, generally. As a company like mine, a biotech company, we fund it by raising money from investors, right? Because right now we do not have products to sell or services to sell. So we fund all the research and development work that we do internally from investors who are willing to give us money, invest in the company and our ideas with the hope that an expectation that in the end, we will have a successful drug out there on the market to sell.
Right. Okay. That makes sense. I've read that a three-pronged approach is needed in order to achieve a functional cure for hepatitis B. And you mentioned this prior in talking about a drug combination. Could you explain and describe this?
Sure. So about 7 years ago, we at Arbutus developed a strategy on how to cure HBV based on what we know about the virus and how the virus interacts with the human body. Immune system. And we call this a three-pronged approach. It is essentially this. Number one, you need to completely arrest viral replication. That is, you must stop the virus from reproducing itself so new virus is not available to infect new liver cells. Second, you must curtail the production of a viral protein called S antigen. Now, S antigen is believed to be used by the virus to control the body's immune response. It is produced in very large quantities and leads to immune exhaustion, i.e. that's the inability of the body's immune system to recognize the virus or infected cells and kill them. So reducing this S antigen could help the immune system to reconstitute itself. And third, you need to reactivate this immune system so that it can help fight off the virus and eliminate the infected cells. Now, the body's immune system is compromised by the virus, so you need to help the body turn it on and rebuild it to help fight the virus. We believe this needs to be done in conjunction with reducing this S antigen protein that is contributing to this problem as well. So consequently, we believe that these three points of attack need to work together, i.e. in combination to achieve an HBV cure.
Yes. And so in reality that you're developing three different drugs or kind of three different methods to conquer HBV. Yeah. So it makes it incredibly more difficult to consider you need, instead of one, you need three.
That's correct. Yes.
No, I think it makes sense from what he said, to attack it from three different directions instead of just, I think that really makes sense. And to the next question, since we're talking about drug here, Arbutus has two drug combinations in phase two clinical trials, and two of those trials are still enrolling patients. So where will people get to learn more about these trials if anyone needs any information on this?
So to find out more about our clinical trials, you can go to our website, which is www.arbutusbio.com, or go to a government website called clinicaltrials.gov. Here you'll find out more about the molecules we have in development and the types of trials we're running. The individual can also speak to their hepatologist or doctor for information on where these trials might be running and how they can get involved. I also believe the Hepatitis B Foundation could also be of help here with their connections, as they follow quite a number of these clinical trials in their database. Many of our trials are multinational or run in various countries throughout the world, so there's opportunities for those outside the U.S. to also get involved.
Yeah, that's very great that it's open internationally. So because sometimes some of these clinical trials seems to be limited, and so I think it's very great that some of your trials are open that people all around the world can participate in.
I agree. A lot of people are frustrated that a lot of these clinical trials are US-based only, especially since, hepatitis B affects many millions of people globally. So you have two distinct groups in your lab, and you explained that the chemistry part played a role and the biology group also played a role. And so I wanted to clarify on how do each of these groups play into targeting the hepatitis B virus?
Yeah, so the drug discovery process is a multidisciplinary effort that brings groups and individuals with different expertise and knowledge to the table. Each of these groups works synergistically in a team that focuses on a particular target with the expectation that they would deliver a viable clinical candidate. So they really work together, very collaboratively. In fact, I'll tell you, there are actually more than just chemistry and biology involved. There's also what we call drug metabolism teams. There are teams on pharmacokinetics and toxicology that are all involved in trying to bring a drug candidate forward. So what you see is the biologists work to really validate a biological target as a viable drug target for therapy. And they build assays, systems to help test potential drugs. Chemists will design drug candidates. They synthesize them, or i.e. make them, and then further optimize the chemical structure based on the testing data provided by the biologist. The DMPK, or drug metabolism pharmacokinetic teams, will assess how these drug candidates behave in cell systems and in whole animal systems to make sure that they get to where they need to get to in the body to attack the disease itself. And then obviously the toxicology team does extensive testing of the candidates for looking for safety signals that may not be desirable for this drug candidate. So as I mentioned, this process is really collaborative. All these individuals and the teams work really together. It's an iterative process where we take information we learn from earlier testing experiments to inform how we can make improvements to the next molecule we make until we ultimately get to that candidate that we hope to take forward into the clinic.
That sounds great. It sounds like an extremely, like you said, collaborative process. So it's good to know that there's multiple groups and scientists working on this. So I was able to ask people living with hepatitis B if there was anything they wanted to ask drug developers and scientists and researchers. And one individual asked, they said, I have the pre-S mutant, which is more dangerous and importantly resistant to the antibody developed from the current vaccine. They said they took Engerix B. And this mutation has a high prevalence, 18.3% and up to 36% in certain countries. And they were wondering if this variant of the virus was taken into account for future drug development. And I think you mentioned this earlier about taking into account different genotypes.
Right. You know, the hepatitis B virus is very varied. Okay. You mentioned that the multiple genotypes, there's 10 different genotypes globally. All of them slightly different. There are these other mutations that was mentioned here, the pre-S mutations that cause certain disease etiologies that are more complex and severe. So it's a very complex disease, you know, to understand and ultimately to treat. As per the specific question, the pre-S mutant, we don't specifically at this time do anything to target this particular mutation. It's not really clear what in the molecular mechanism of pathogenesis of the pre-S variants, right? What are the pathogenesis associated with these pre-S variants? However, I will say many of the drugs we are developing should address these variants and reduce the production of these mutant proteins. So a lot of the things that we're doing actually prevents the production of these proteins from happening very early on in the process. So ultimately, they won't have as detrimental an effect downstream as it relates to the drug therapy. So for example, our siRNA agent AB729 actually stops the production of all viral proteins, including these S antigens. So they should have a positive impact on a number of these pre-S variant viruses. So I'm hopeful that therapies that we're developing will be relatively broad-based and will be able to provide positive outcomes for patients across a broad spectrum.
That sounds wonderful. We're also all hopeful for that as well.
Yeah, very hopeful. Just a follow-up question on the pre-S mutant. Dr. Sophia, if you can help us a little bit here, how prominent is this pre-S mutant, would you say?
Well, that's a hard question. I don't have the statistics at hand here. I think, you know, the individuals say that it's a pretty high prevalence, right? The comment in the question was that the mutation has a high prevalence, about 18%, potentially up to 36% in certain countries. So it kind of depends on the genotype that exists. And also there are a lot of different variants of these pre-S mutations, right? There's an associated link to various stages of the disease, whether it's chronic hepatitis, whether it's liver cirrhosis, or whether it's liver cancer, percentage of patients in it with a certain genotype that have these pre-S variants and what the impact that will be on the outcome of their disease. There's certainly some information out there that describes that. But, you know, one would have to look at specifically against the genotype and these pre-S variants, what the specific variant is and what the predicted outcome for those patients are associated with that particular variant in that particular genotype.
I think this really adds more to what you said earlier when you said the hepatitis B is very complex. I think it throws more light on how complex it is and the things you have to consider in a process. You make a great point and address all the challenges that scientists and researchers face in the process of trying to find a cure. So the next question is, how do you ensure that you have patient input on what kind of drug they are looking for as you go through the process of trying to come up with a cure for Hep B?
Yeah, that's a good question. Now, patient input is very important in developing of any drug. We want to make sure that whatever therapies we developed are well accepted by the patient community, and therefore patients will take those drugs, right? To do this, we do elicit feedback from patients on what they are looking for in therapies. This is done through dialogues we have with organizations like the Hepatitis B Foundation, who actually talk directly to patients and do these kinds of inquiries. We also speak to other patient advocacy groups that will provide this kind of input for us. We do attend medical conferences where we ask doctors who are directly treating patients what their patients want in the characteristics of a drug. We try to get this information from a number of different avenues so that we have that feedback from the patient community and we can more effectively develop the characteristics in the drug we develop here at Arbutus. But it's important that the patient's voice and their needs are known and that they speak out. I'll say to the patients out there, having strong patient advocacy will lead to better drugs that meet their needs in the future.
Thank you for echoing that about the importance of the patient's voice and patient advocacy. I think it's very, very important.
To wrap up the podcast, Dr. Sophia, what is your final comment or advice to all the hepatitis B patients around the globe listening to you today?
Look, we all know curing hepatitis B is not an easy task. However, I think we're working very hard. So I'll say, don't be disillusioned. Real progress is being made. We're learning more every day that takes us to our goal of an HBV cure. We're fighting for you every day, and we won't stop until a cure is in hand.
Thank you so much. And thank you again for being on the podcast and answering our questions about drug development and hepatitis B.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate this opportunity. And hopefully this will be informative to all the hepatitis B patients out there as they try to not only manage their disease, but understand what's being done to try to ultimately provide them with a cure and a better life in the future.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Dr. Sophia. As a patient myself, this means a lot to me, as most time patients really don't know what is going on in the scientific world and research and all that in the drug process and all that. So we really appreciate you coming on and sharing with us, like making us aware that we are not left alone, that someone or some group of people are still working on our behalf to find a cure. So thank you very much for coming on.
Well, thank you. And I believe hope is on the way.
Thank you for listening to this episode. Stay tuned and subscribe for future episodes about hepatitis B. If you have any questions, please direct them to info@hepb.org. You can support our programs at the Hepatitis B Foundation by going to www.hepb.org/donate or click on the link in this page. We greatly appreciate all your support and thank you so much for listening. We'll see you in the next episode.